Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.
This episode is brought to you by Just Egg. It's a better egg, made from plants. Bring more customers in your doors with Just Egg. Start with a free sample at ju.st/hrn.
This week on Meat and Three, we're turning an eye to food at its trickiest, from imitation olive oil to the pretensions of 3D printers.
We were just doing like a birthday party for one of the employees, and we printed a steak just for fun.
You know, a grape Jolly Rancher isn't going to satisfy your craving for grapes. So, I mean, in a sense, it kind of multiplies the sensory qualities that we can love in the world.
So basically, you culture the cell in a bioreactor, it grows, and then ultimately, at the end, you come out with a piece of meat.
Tune in to Meat and Three, available wherever you listen to podcasts.
Hello and welcome to Cooking Issues. This is Dave Arnold, your host of Cooking Issues, coming to you live on the Heritage Radio Network every Tuesday, whenever we want, whenever we do want, whatever. I'm in the Lower East Side of Manhattan. I'm a little late today. It's like old school me, a little late. We got Nastasia the Hammer Lopez in Connecticut. How you doing?
Good.
Yeah, how's the teepee? We could talk about that later.
Good. Tomorrow there's supposed to be a thunderstorm, so we'll really see how
Ooh.
It...
Ooh. Yeah. Ooh. So we got John. How you doing, John?
Hi, everybody. Good. Thanks.
What do you call that? You call it the Murray Hill? What do you call it? Then?
Yep, Murray Hill. Exactly. Mm-hmm. Yep.
And we never figured out who Murray was, right?
I think he's, if I remember correctly, a shipping merchant from 1700s.
All right. Yeah. Not Fred McMurray, whose greatest role was in Double Indemnity. Remember that movie?
Never even heard of that movie.
Oh, my God. Stas, you don't like old movies, right? So you haven't seen Double Indemnity, probably. What
that
about you, Matt?
That is insulting.
I have heard of Double Indemnity. I have not seen Double
Every time
Indemnity.
I try to bring it up, you yell at me and say I'm an idiot for asking you whether you've seen it because you don't like to watch things like that. Right. Why is that insulting? I'm happy if you like that kind of stuff because I like that kind of stuff. It's something we can talk about.
It would make Old movies happy. is a very broad genre.
Okay.
You know the movies I like, so it's weird that you're saying I don't like old movies.
Oh, old noir movies?
I don't know.
Anyway, it's a great movie. Well, I don't know whether it holds up now because I'm sure if I looked at it, you know, with I haven't seen it in 20 years, so I'm sure it's viciously anti-woman because the whole theory is that this woman convinces Fred McMurray, which is what made me think of it, the My Three Sons guy, convinces as an insurance agent to bump off her husband. And then because of the way he's dying, he gets double indemnity. She gets twice the insurance. And then it's Edward G. Robinson, if my memory serves me correct, who's the gangster who's often imitated in the Bugs Bunny cartoons. That guy. Mm-hmm. So, like, he is not playing a bad guy here, kind of. He plays the insurance adjuster who's like, yo, Fred McMurray, doesn't this seem kind of fishy? Like that. And so, like, it's a whole thing. But I'm sure that, like, they blame the woman for it and everything like this. I'm sure that's how it goes. I haven't seen it in many years. I'm sure all of noir is like that. Anyways, so for those of you that pay attention to our Instagram Live, was it last week, Stas?
Yeah, it seems like a long time ago, I guess.
Seems like a long, long time ago, right? So last week after the radio show, Nastasia had John and I and Koji the dog up there to put together her teepee. And so now she has a full 12-foot, like, honest-to-goodness teepee in Stamford, Connecticut, right?
Yeah. We'll see if it holds up.
Well, it's going to hold up but for sure you said that there's, like, a storm coming tomorrow. Now, for those of you that, like, Nastasia's place is, like, kind of crazy in that, you know how usually when you're along the coast, you don't have like a big lawn, you know what I mean? Yeah. But like Nastasia has a, like Nastasia's place is like tiny little house on a big lawn.
So everyone, find me. You know the town. You know the description. Come all.
Yeah. Okay, well, we'll see. If that happens, I'll take the blame. How about that?
Okay. So anyway. So I'll give them your address.
You have in the past.
No, I've never given them your address.
And I haven't given your address.
There was only
either.
One time where something got screwed up. But not your address.
Someone has already set off to walk the entire Connecticut coastline looking for a teepee.
That's very Leatherman-like. Yeah, yeah. Anyways, so there's a thunderstorm coming up, right? Oh, so bad. So bad. So bad. Let me put it to you this way. If you're going to manufacture a teepee, like, you only make, like, two or three sizes. How's about you make, like, just, you can have your booklet that you made when you were high as a kite.
In 78, like, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, 78, 80 with the bell bottoms, everything. Like, you can smell the people coming off the pages 45 years later. You can smell it. You know what I'm saying? But my point is that, like, you could just make a single, like, sheet of, like, Xeroxed paper that was like, oh, your particular teepee? Yeah, you're going to want this layout. Would it be that hard, Stas?
Or just email me a PDF, like, weeks before, you know, because it took 6 weeks to make. So I could have read it, you know.
So I'll give you some hints. So first of all, John and I, you know, I'm going to call you out a little bit, Nastasia. Nastasia did receive the instruction, didn't read the damn
thing. The day before you guys came, yeah.
Whoa. But, okay, because here's one thing. So imagine, if you will, like 14 foot long.
Like, those came weeks before, so they should have told me, yeah.
Right.
16 feet, right?
16 feet? Okay, so 16 feet long. Imagine if you took a bamboo skewer and you just scaled it up to 16 feet. And that's basically what's, you know, they delivered up, like, it was like the giant from Jack and the Beanstalk came and just dropped those things on Nastasia's lawn. Pretty much right?
Yeah. And they sat there for weeks and I told them they arrived.
Killing the grass.
Yeah.
And, you know, anyways. But so then the very first instruction, John, in the teepee, what is it?
Seal up the poles with a wax.
Linseed oil your poles. Yeah. But those instructions came with the teepee, and that those came the day before you guys showed up. So yeah.
Three coats at least, us.
And I was incredibly hungover the day that the teepee showed up.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So my bad.
Yeah. Anyway, but even aside from the fact that now she has an unsealed poles, as we say. Yeah, those instructions sucked. They really sucked. But it's up there. Yeah. I think it's good to go.
We'll see. We will see.
There's a big thunderstorm, you say, coming tomorrow. So, and the reason I was talking about the big lawn was because the tallest thing for miles around is your teepee, pretty much.
Yeah, and it might end up in somebody else's lawn.
You need to get like a camera. No, it's not to worry about that. I want to see the lightning strike the top of the teepee. You need a camera to get that lightning strike.
Yeah.
Have the neighbors said anything, Nastasia?
There was a little bit of something. One neighbor said the other neighbor asked about it.
Oh, I love that. I love that. Hey, look, for me, it's fine. I love it. For
me personally. Yeah. But, you know, the other neighbor. Yeah.
The other neighbor, not so much. Anyway, that's a classic. By the way, anyone who uses this tactic, we see you. We understand what you're doing. It's like when my kids try to like lie to me, and I'm like, I was also a kid once. We understand your lie. For me, it's fine. It's the other guy. What other guy? There's no one else next to us. Which other guy? Like that, right? It was pretty much like that.
Yeah.
People. So today is Jen's birthday, my wife's birthday.
What did you get her, and what are you doing?
I am cooking her. Well, so we were at we went to Connecticut over the weekend, and Miley and Wiley cooked her the family birthday dinner with you know, some delicious cake. And then I'm doing the, like, our immediate, like, just the four of us dinner tonight. So she wanted like a blast from her past. So I'm doing Jaeger schnitzel and spätzle. And then Booker's going to bake a cake.
Nice.
Yeah. Yeah, should be good. Got her some stuff she likes. But Jen doesn't like, doesn't want stuff. That's the problem. You know what I mean?
She doesn't like it when you spend money. That's the thing.
It's not just the money. It's just we have no space. Like, anything that you bring into the house, I need to throw something else away. Mm-hmm. Like, the house is, like, our apartment is, like, little just dribbles of Booker and Dax parts, like, lying around. Like bits of Sears All, like, you know, like, disassembled Spins Alls, like, 3D prints of, like, jigs and fixtures. Just kind of, like every little corner has something, like, shoved into it. So she just doesn't want any objects.
So you got her nothing.
No, but thanks for being a jerk.
Wait, so you did get her something?
I did, but something small. Something. So, like, it's hard. Like, I have to wait. Like, when it was my birthday, at this point in our life, you know, I just let her know. But, like, I was like, you know what? I want this thing. Because, like, it's hard. I'm hard to shop for sometimes. You know what I mean? So, you know, I got her. She was interested in this little mini personal fireplace thing. She showed it to me online. So I was like, oh, she showed it to me. I will get it. You know what I mean?
Like a fake fireplace? I love that.
No, it makes real fire, but it's like tiny. It's like miniaturized.
For the house?
It's Nastasia, when I say miniature, I mean like remember in Zoolander when he's like, is this a school for ants? Like that size.
Like a dollhouse.
Well, not quite that small size. You're going from one to the other. It's like imagine a fire pit that's meant to go on your table. Anyway, she expressed interest, so I bought it.
Okay.
You know. Dax got her a some form of back massager. He bought it. I don't know whether she's gonna like it or not. I left it up to him. It's up to him. And that, you know, at his age, it should just be up to him, no?
Yeah.
Anyway. So I'll let you guys know how the spetzel. You like spetzel?
Yeah.
I think spetzel's delicious. Yeah, what about you, John?
Yeah.
It's delicious.
And schnitzel, very good also.
Oh yeah, I'm doing pork. She wanted that. She was in the mood for the pork version of the Jaeger schnitzel. Jaeger schnitzel, for those of you that don't know. So first of all, I've mentioned on the air before that I enjoy and there's good honor in an old school schnitzel that uses standard breadcrumbs and not panko, right? Because that's the way it's supposed to be, right? Now you could make a schnitzel out of anything. I think a lot of people here in the U.S. when they make a schnitzel, they do it with the chicken breast because it's super easy to go out and buy chicken breast. You know what I mean? You know what I hate about making stuff like that with a chicken breast is that I was teaching Dax how to do it actually the other day. It's just like the chicken guts, like the chicken pieces that spray all over your kitchen, and then you have to worry about the chicken pieces all over your kitchen. Because you know when you put two layers of plastic wrap down on your cutting board and you start whacking the hell out of it, that what's the first thing that happens to that plastic wrap?
I don't know.
It rips, and then there's chicken spray everywhere. And you hit one extra hit with that mallet to get it just thin enough, and there's like a line of chicken all across your and I'm just trying to get Dax to understand what is filth and what's not. So he'll filth something with raw chicken, and I'm like, no, don't touch that. Or he's like, he'll put the knife back in the wrong position. I'm like, don't do that. Or he'll put the open chicken package in the wrong place. I'm like, you don't do that. I'm trying to like train him to, you know what I mean? Anyways, so at least with pork, I don't have to worry about it. I can beat the crap out of it and then like wash it down. I don't have to worry about, you know, salmonella on it. But she wants the pork. What's your guys' favorite schnitzel meat?
Veal?
Yeah. You guys? Yeah, straight on veal. Kalb, yeah. Kalb schnitzel. Yeah, all right. Yeah, so I'm doing pork. It was what was requested. I know how to do the veal. But I think I might, because I have to F with something, like typically when you do schnitzels are relatively shallow fried, right? I think I might try to deep fry it. What do you guys think?
Okay.
Do it. I was actually just thinking, yeah, I was curious about that. So yeah, do that. Let us know how it goes.
Yeah. Yeah, because I bought a home deep fryer because I don't have people might be interested in this actually. So, it's difficult. You can't go into a Bed Bath & Beyond anymore and just buy a deep fryer. They don't sell them really anymore because everyone thinks that air frying is frying, which it isn't. We all know that air frying is not frying. It's like some form of like quick like impingement cooking, but it ain't frying. I'm sorry. Like spraying a par cooked potato with Pam and then putting it into a blast of hot air doesn't equal a French fry. It just does not. Anyways, so I bought a, they have these new, relatively new whole batch of fryers. And are you guys familiar with the new safety stuff that they have on deep fryers? I'll take this deafening.
No.
So the problem was, is that like old electric fryers, what people used to do is they would plug the fryer into something, and then they would, the worst of worst is they would use an extension cord, or they would plug it into something that wasn't directly where it was, and they would pull on the extension cord and the hot oil will go all over them. Even worse, there's a lot of cases of small children where they've grabbed a hold of the cord, which was up high, and pulled the boiling oil down on themselves. So it's just like fryers from a safety standpoint were just a huge nightmare. So now they all have these kind of awesome magnetic breakaway cords where it's like the cord pops off. But what's nice about that also is it makes it like pretty easy for cleaning. So these new fryers, they're fairly cheap, and they mimic a cold zone kind of, because they have, they don't heat from underneath, right? Like the old Fry Daddies used to. They have an immersion heater that's shaped similar to the bottom, but held off of the bottom by a couple of millimeters, so that stuff can sink down to the bottom and maybe not scorch instantly. And then they have the temperature controller strapped right over where that is. So the problem with frying in a pot is that A, you're overheating the bottom of the oil, and then if you don't, it's very hard to get kind of a good temperature throughout, because unless you're measuring with a probe in the oil, if you're measuring with one of these probes underneath on an induction or something, it's just hard to get a good fry temperature and keep it solid. So these things that have the temperature measurement strapped right to the thing that sits in the oil do a great job. They're fast because the heater is relatively large. They don't overheat the oil. And I've been running some tests by actually measuring the oil breakdown over the course of 4 or 5 fries. And in a pot, I can maybe get, you know, a couple of fries out of some oil before it really starts degrading. Whereas in this fryer that I'm using now, which is not even expensive, it was like under $100. It was made by, I think, Sakura, I think. I can't remember. I can look it up. But I've been getting like five fries out of this stuff, and I'm measuring the oil, the total polar compounds in the oil, like with a device that I bought, because I'm writing a book on these things, and so I bought a device that lets me accurately measure the oil that I'm working with, and it stays good. It's crazy. It's very good. So I'll report more on that later if people want to know about frying, and I'll let you know, John, and if people care, I'll let them know how the schnitzel works when it deep fries. Some people, I think the problem with deep frying the schnitzel is just they're so big, right, that you don't want to, like, imagine if how much oil it would take in a deep fry as opposed to getting the widest pan that you can and frying with it. You know what I mean? Anyway.
Yeah.
Oh, the other nice thing about these fryers is that it seems like they're real cheap when you get them, because they are, but they basically use enameled hotel pans, like 6-inch deep or maybe a little deeper hotel pans, as their oil thing. So you just let it cool a little bit, and you can just lift the entire pan off, pour it out, and throw the sucker in the dishwasher. So the only thing you're really hand washing is the actual heating element, because you can't immerse it. So it's easy to clean as well. Anyway, there you go. Simon Stillwell, working on a pea cocktail. Right now I'm muddling the peas, but wondering if nitro muddling would preserve the flavor and color better. I thought I answered this, but no. I mean, it might preserve the flavor and color better, but the problem, pea shoots might work. I mean, but they taste like starch is the only problem. You know how I feel about starch. But the anything that's hard like a pea, you would need to let it freeze for a long time. And then you'd want to crush it really good. If you did it in a tin, they get really hard and really solid, so it's hard to freeze something as big as a pea as opposed to a leaf without over-freezing the tin. And if you over-freeze the tin, it just gets really hard to do a shaken cocktail. So I don't know. You might have some, you need to try it. Let me know, but you might have some problems with it. From Ben King, 216, I've got a stainless steel version of the liquid bread carbonating cap. Is it a terrible, messy idea to use that with a cold brew and a tank of nitrogen I got for Guinness on tap? I just don't think you're going to get necessarily a good result. The idea of the nitrogen as opposed to nitrous. Nitrous is soluble, and when you let go of the pressure, it expands. Nitrogen is very not soluble. And so you need to put it under high pressure and then release it quickly through a nozzle to have the small nitrogen bubbles poof up and do that nitrogen thing, because it's not really in solution to the same extent that nitrous is. So I don't know that you're going to get what you want unless you're doing like they do in the ECs, where you're putting a lot of pressure, turning it upside down, and spraying it through a nozzle. From Aragost on Twitter, every sourdough bread recipe agrees that baking... Didn't I answer this, guys? Every sourdough bread recipe agrees that baking bread needs steam. If I have a steam oven, can I avoid using the pot plus lid method? How does steam help the formation of the crust? Thanks, Agostino. Yeah, you can. So I've heard various... So, like, I've been testing with the steam oven with the Anova, and it works great. I put it on 100% steam. I crank it for, you know, 20 minutes or so, then I turn the steam off and finish the bake, and it seems to work great. I've heard various reasons about why the steam does what it's doing, retards the formation of the setting of the crust so you get more spring, to just making it kind of a thicker crust layer by like shock gelatinizing it on the outside. I've heard the answer is I don't know the real reason. I haven't yet. Maybe I will see like a scientific paper that actually gives me an explanation that I can just look at and agree. I guess I could try to peruse the old, the relatively new modernist bread stuff. But the answer is it does work. Answer, I don't know why. I have guesses why, but not enough to tell you why. And yes, you don't need the pot and lid if you have a steam oven. Sargon.
If you think they're repeats, Dave, it's because I delete them as I go unless you don't answer them adequately.
Ooh.
That's my system.
So you're saying you that I have answered it. I have answered them inadequately, you're saying.
Well, you might have started it, but then you never finished it.
Ah. So. All right.
The cube video.
The cube video. Sargon wrote in, and this is regarding the Anova steam oven that we did a show with Scott a while back. So it's specific to this oven. So sorry if you don't have the steam oven, but if the internal oven has a steam oven controls via injection and an explicitly electronic vent feature, when will that be exposed? Scott has to answer that. The answer is it doesn't have a vent feature. That was another thing that they were looking into doing, and they decided that it wasn't worth the cost and the fact that it might fail. So it doesn't have that. It just naturally does its own thing. Steve Yoon wrote in, and of poetry fame, of an amberjack kampachi fame. Hey, Anastasia, I vaguely remember you guys mentioning a peanut butter candy company giving up on its fresh-tasting peanut butter because it turned out that people were used to the stale flavor. It looks like, and that was Reese's, by the way. It looks like, I think that guy was drunk when he told me that. Because you know what? Have any of you guys ever worked a trade show?
Yep.
Yeah, it's grueling, right? It sucks, right?
Mm-hmm.
It really sucks, especially like if you're at the wrong trade show. So like, I think like roughly a third of people who are at a trade show who have bought a booth, they're kind of at the wrong trade show, so they're not doing a lot of business. And so everyone that comes up and talks to them is a joker. So I think this guy had like at lunch like cracked like 5 or 6 beers and was just like so sick of talking to people that weren't actually going to pay his business money. They just started telling me stuff about the Reese's Corporation. Anyway, Steve says, it looks like Reese's overcame that problem with marketing. A friend got some like new Reese's that apparently don't have the stale peanut butter and says that they really like them, says they're stoked about them. I have not had these new like super fresh Reese's, but I like a Reese's. So
what Steve pointed out, and I looked into it, you can sign up to be on the email list at Hershey's, but every once in a while Reese's comes out with Reese's that are like fresh off the factory floor, like within 3 days.
Ooh.
That's what his friend had, yeah.
Well, we need to do a side-by.
Yeah.
I mean, cooking issues needs to be a part of this, like, Reese's taste test.
Yeah, I'll sign up for the email right.
Stas, what are your feelings on Reese's?
Yeah, let's do it.
You like Reese's?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Where is that in your pantheon of common candies?
Depends on time of the month.
Not time of the year. Okay. All right. I will not pester you further on that. What about you, Matt?
I'm muted. I don't have opinions on Reese's. I should have just stayed muted.
You don't have opinions on Reese's?
Correct.
How do you have no opinion? I understand, like, not liking it.
Ridiculous child who, like, really didn't do candy. And so, like, I am sure that I've had a Reese's at some point, I imagine.
My God. Was this your call or your parents' call?
Oh, it was totally me. I mean, well, obviously, as it's continued, like, sometime in the past 15 years, I probably could have gone out and gotten my own Reese's. But have I? No.
Were you also one of those kids that didn't watch television?
No, I watched TV.
Okay.
It wasn't so a rule. It was not a rule. It was just that, like, I would go out, do fun stuff, like, get dressed up for Halloween, do all the trick-or-treating, and then give my candy to other people.
Wow.
Do you like any candy now as an adult, or still not?
I just eat, like, straight chocolate bars, pretty much. Well, I mean, with other things, I'll do, like, with nuts and stuff and whatever. But, like, yeah, I still don't really do candy so much.
Okay. All right. It sounded when you started on that like you were going to be like, hey, we didn't watch television and we embroidered all day. You know what I mean?
No, I honestly think this is why I was so bad at furnishing tasting notes when I was a brewer too, because I feel like I missed out on an entire spectrum of things that, like, of shared flavor things that, like, we as a culture know about, and I just, like, never tried any of them. I don't have them in my vocabulary.
So let me ask you, I'm going to throw some at you. Ready?
This is going to be very bad. Yes, go.
Okay, watermelon Jolly Rancher.
That is one of the only things I would pick out the watermelon Jolly Ranchers, and I love them.
All right, okay. Because that's one of those, like, doesn't really taste like a watermelon, but it's an iconic flavor.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. It's like it's a substitute that doesn't try and replace what is there. It just, like, expands our palate slightly.
Speaking of which, like Apple Jacks, you know what's some BS? Do you know that they, like, add some minute amount of apple now to Apple Jacks? And it says on the package that it, like, you know, because I always thought the nice thing about Apple Jacks were no fruit was harmed in the making of this feature. You know what I mean? And yet now it says, like, with real apples and cinnamon. So, like, they must, you know, like, they have, like, a vat of, like, you know, 50,000 pounds of grain, and then they throw two apples. Yeah.
Or, like, there's an apple on a desk nearby, and, like, the molecules are wafting over.
Yeah, yeah. So you ate sugary cereals growing up, so you're not a monster.
I'm not a total monster, but it was a very similar thing. I had, like, one. I had Apple Jacks and Honey Nut Cheerios, and those were the only cereals I would try, and I never tried the rest of them.
I like Honey Nut Cheerios. They're good. Nastasia, what's your favorite cereal? Other than Count Chocula, I know, but that's seasonal.
It really depends. There's so many good ones. It depends on the day.
If you were going to have a bowl of cereal right now, what would it be?
Chocolate Rice Krispies.
Ooh. So you like those that kind of dusty cocoa flavor.
Mm-hmm.
But do you like Cocoa Puffs?
No.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't like them either. Is it because of the bird or because of the cereal?
Cereal.
Yeah. What about you, John? I don't like that bird either. But what about you, John? Ooh, I never had that. Ooh, so do you like having your mouth ripped apart? Do you like that part of Captain Crunch? So you've calloused the inside of your mouth so that now you're total... Because to me, the thing about Captain Crunch, and I like them. I'm not saying anything negative about Captain Crunch. Please, I don't want to hear anything about it. But... Like, one, even though I don't think that they add fat to it, it always tasted like it had a layer of grease on the outside to me, which is, you know, not a bad thing. And then it also, like, felt like I was eating a box of knives because the top of my mouth would be horribly, like, mutilated. What about you, Stas? You get that out of that?
I don't like Captain Crunch.
But do you agree with me on the mutilating your mouth?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And that weird kind of, like, it might be greasy? I like it, though.
Yeah.
Captain Crunch used to also have pretty on-point cereal box prizes. I feel like, do they still do the cereal box prize?
No idea.
No. They did have a bunch of like fun things to do on the back, like a map and a little crossword puzzle and all those things.
That got the internet though. I don't need the back of my cereal box to tell me what's fun. Like, yeah. I mean, when I was a kid, like the back of your cereal box, you're like, ooh, this is the best news I'm going to get all day. But like, you know, nowadays I have the internet. What do I need the back of my cereal box to tell me something for? You know what I mean?
Sounds like you need to tap into your inner child and enjoy the back of the cereal box again.
Well, we used to buy cereals based on what had a good prize, and then the first thing you do is rip the entire top off and jam your hand all the way into the bag. I can still hear all the cereal as it moves out of the way of my hand going all the way through the bag down to the bottom to try to get that prize out. And then you could never make the box look right again because you weren't supposed to do that. You were told by your parents not to do that. So you had to smack the two sides of the box together to get it back into box form instead of a pillow form and then close it all up again.
We waited.
Oh, me.
We're animals like you.
We waited. And whoever got to the bottom of the box, they got the prize.
Yeah, it is true.
Ooh. Well, you know what? I don't buy that. I mean, like, I like that you're saying it. It's a nice, I'm imagining, like, the Lopez
it
family sitting around the breakfast table wondering,
true.
Oh, brother Joey, will you be the one to get the prize?
Yeah, it is true.
Okay. One of my favorite cereal prizes was Captain Crunch made a little blue plastic submarine, and somehow you put baking soda into it.
Oh, yeah, I remember that.
Yeah, and it would, like, I forget whether it would go down and then come back up because of the baking soda. It did something fun. It was good business. It was good. You know what was always weak? The Cracker Jack prize, always weak. Who needs a, like, a blurry temporary tattoo? Get me a sharp one or get me nothing at all. You know what I mean? Blurry temporary.
And yet tattoo. You don't have any tattoos.
Yeah, no, I don't have any tattoos. There's nothing that I would want, like, permanently. Plus, like,
Oh, come on, Dave. Let's say you had to get a tattoo. You had to keep your family alive. What would you get?
How big does it have to be? Where is it going to go?
It's going to go on your bicep.
Oh. Mm. Okay.
And, no, it's going to go on your forearm.
My forearm.
Your forearm.
So, like, you know, where Popeye has his anchor?
Yeah.
Oh, Dave, you can just get a shirt tattooed on you so you never, like, literally never take your shirt off.
Yeah. Well, that's true. No one would ever see it anyway. So it's like I could do anything. I could put, like, a dog poop. It wouldn't matter. No one's ever going to see it.
Okay, but what would you get?
Probably that elf, the elf that I always draw.
Hmm.
What would you get?
Oh, God. I don't know. I really don't.
Because you're also tattooless, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, are we the only people left? John, do you have one?
I do not have any tattoos.
Whoa, Matt?
Nothing.
Wow.
Okay, so we're not useful people. Like, we are so far outside of the zeitgeist that whoever's listening should stop listening to us because clearly we have nothing in common with you.
We should definitely end the tattoo segment right now. That seems clear.
Although I feel that, like, if you were 6 years younger than me, the odds of you having a tattoo, like, went up, like, by a factor of 8. You know what I mean? Like, I was right before that hit huge, I think. You know what I mean? You were still a little bit of a wild child. You know what I mean? At my age. Anyway. Definitely the elf, I think. Definitely the elf. You haven't chosen yet, right, Nastasia?
No, I don't know what I would... No, I really don't know. I really don't
Would
know.
It be a word or a picture?
I don't know. Picture, I guess.
Mm. Mm. But again, you hate choosing things like this that are permanent, right?
Yeah. Hate permanence.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, well, don't worry. None of us are permanent. So there's that. All right. Dan Turner wants to know if there's any good books on Mezcal we recommend. I attended a Del Mague virtual class yesterday and want to delve more into it. Do I have any specific we have let me get back to you, Dan Turner. We should have Jay back on or another Mezcal expert back on and just talk Mezcal. Cause I'm not like a super expert in what's the current state of the art Mezcal book, so I don't want to give any
He could Google it.
Well, they want to know what we think. Mm-hmm. You know what we should get back on? Because I had another cookbook question from somebody else on fruits. We should get Matt back on. From Kitchen Arts and Letters. Every once in a while, we should just have Matt on and just be like, people want to know about this, 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 and he could rattle off, like, the four greatest books that were ever written on that subject. You know what I mean? Because we haven't done classics in the field in a long time. I'm not prepared for it today either. We've got to get back on the classics field. Anyway.
Send them an email. We'll book something.
What?
I'll send them an email. We'll make it happen.
All right.
We'll book something, yeah.
Sam Erickson wrote in about Jack Schramm's article on fat washing. I'm a novice, so forgive me if there's something obvious I'm missing. Milk has fat in it, especially whole milk. So what makes milk washing different from fat washing? From a quick Googling, it seems that fat washing generally adds flavor while milk washing strips it. Both processes add body, but does milk washing do it better? What's so special about milk that makes it better than other fats? First of all, milk does a body good. That's what's so special about it. Feel free to cover this on the radio show if it's easier. Well, here I am covering it on the radio show. They are completely different. Milk washing would work even if you used skim milk. It's just I will never recommend people buy skim milk because I don't want it to be produced because I believe it's a monstrosity. I believe that it shouldn't exist. If the fat is not the important part of milk washing. In milk washing, the important part is the milk proteins, right? So you're using the casein in the milk to bond on to astringent things, and then you are curdling it and stripping out the milk protein, but you're leaving the whey protein, which is what you, when you say adds body, actually adds texture when you shake it. When you shake it, it gets foamy, like almost like not as much, but almost like you put an egg white into that sucker. So that's what milk washing does. Fat washing doesn't necessarily add any body. What you're doing there is you are taking a flavorful fat. So think bacon grease or fancy olive oil or some sort of flavored fat with no liquid in it. Fat washing has no water-based, the more water-based stuff in it, the less it's fat washing. And so Don Lee, you know, my partner at XCon, he hated more than anything on earth when people would call, well, that's not true. In terms of mislabeling things for cooking, he hated when people would call things fat washing that weren't. In fat washing, you are taking a flavorful fat, and then you are taking alcohol, not water, alcohol, right? And the reason you're doing alcohol is because the whole idea of fat washing is there are things that are in fats that are much more soluble in alcohol than they are in water. And so you're using the alcohol, because this whole thing is based on the old technique of enfleurage, right? Where you would take flower petals, you would layer them into deodorized animal fat, and then on these big trays, you would layer all of them, and then you would turn them, and you keep turning them until the fat was completely imbued with these like non-polar aroma compounds from the flower petals. You would then take that fat, which now had the floral elements in it, and then you would wash that with high-proof ethanol, right? And so then these things that were, not polar, that weren't soluble in water, would go into the ethanol, and you would get these great, very delicate kind of floral things, enfleurage. And so fat washing is like a take on this kind of enfleurage technique where you're using alcohol as the solvent to remove or to strip flavors out of the fats and into the liquor. Does that make sense? Was that a decent answer? Is that going to make it off the list this time, John?
Yep, deleting it right now. Good work.
All right.
This episode is brought to you by Just Egg. You can't have plant-based breakfast without a plant-based egg. Just Egg is now the fastest-growing egg brand in the United States. Bring more plant-based consumers in your doors with easy-to-use Just Egg. You can get started with a free sample. Just head to ju.st/hrn. Made from plants, Just Egg is a better egg for you and for the planet. It's healthier, with no cholesterol and less saturated fat. And it's more sustainable. Just Egg uses less water and generates fewer carbon emissions. Most importantly, it's delicious. For our listeners who operate a food service establishment, you can get a sample for free. Head to ju.st/hrn. Just Egg makes a delicious, plant-based addition to any menu. It's available as a liquid scramble, great for omelets, frittatas, stir fries, and French toast. There's also frozen, pre-baked, folded version that's ideal for filling breakfast sandwiches or topping salads. Chef Jose Andreas calls Just Egg mind-blowing, And Bon Appetit says, "It's so good, I feel guilty eating it." Put the fastest growing egg brand on your menu. Get a free sample of Just Egg for your restaurant at ju.st/HRN.
Isabella DiGiulio wrote in, "Hey, Anastasia, John, and Matt. I'm excited to actually finally write you. I know it might be, I feel like I've read this. I know it might be a tad mad, but I've listened to nearly 300 of the episodes." That's a lot. That's a lot. That's a lot. How many have we done, Stas?
I don't know.
452.
Jesus.
452?
Jesus.
Yep.
Oh, so in two episodes we're 454, we need to burn all of our paper.
Why?
454.
454?
Yeah. 4, right?
1.
451. Dude.
Oh, so we already missed it?
We missed it last week. Oh, crap.
Should have, lit everyone on fire last week. And we could have. We were all in the same room. We could have just started a big paper fire and burnt us all down. And in fact, Nastasia was, for once saying that I did a good job with the paper fires helping her get her flu working. But I don't think she said it on air. But anyway.
No.
But, if your flu doesn't draw properly, people, like, odds are you just need to heat that thing up. So if you don't want to smoke your house out while you're heating it up, get a very fast burning fire, like a lightly wadded, lightly crumpled paper, and just super heat up your flu. Does anyone just make a flu warmer?
Like, no, where you, I've looked.
You know what you could get, Stas, if you're interested?
I know, blowtorch attached to propane tank.
Like a weed burning torch.
Yes. Okay. But it works now, so.
All right. It's been a real joy, source of laughter. Thanks. And information, especially as I'm still on furlough and live alone. I love listening to them at home. I'm super fruit obsessed about figs and just love fruits and vegetables. And I was wondering what your favorite books and sources of information are on fruit. This is a good question for Matt, because the minor. I tried to find that book you mentioned, Fruits of Brazil, but I could not find it. You can buy that book directly on the Fruit and Spice Park in South Dade. I think you can buy that book directly, but I don't really recommend, you need to have a very particular mental outlook to actually like that book. It's completely useless. You can't buy any of those fruits. So it's more like every time I look at it, I'm like, I need to get to Brazil. I need to get to Brazil. I need to get to Brazil. I was wondering your favorite books and sources of information on fruit. Okay. I spend most of my time eating or sourcing fruit this summer. I'm going to travel to meet more fig farmers. I like how it's more fig farmers, how you've already met tier one of fig farmers, and now you're moving down to tier three and four of fig farmers. At the moment, we are getting incredible Indian mangoes like the Alfonso, and the season has just started. I hope next year to travel for the season in India. So I've never been to India. I want to go. Harold McGee says he's going to get us a hookup in India. The Fairchild has the best collection of mangoes in the United States. Maybe there's someone in Hawaii that has a decent collection as well, but the Fairchild in also in South Dade has the greatest collection of mangoes. But Nastasia and I, we were not necessarily treated the best there. Right, Stas?
Nope, we were not.
They kicked us out in the rain, wouldn't let us eat, and the lady was like, "I'm cooking breakfast, get out." Remember that? It was so weird.
Yes.
We had flown all the way from New York just to eat those mangoes. We had ostensibly gotten permission to do so, and then and we didn't even want anything. We just wanted to be left alone. She tells us not to pick the mangoes off the trees because they need to save it for people that she cares about. Remember this?
Yeah.
And so we're picking ones that just fell, and we're writing notes. And she's like, "You don't know anything about that mango. You pick that off the ground. You need to pick that off the tree." We're like, "You just said I can't pick the mangoes off the tree." And then we're trying to, it's raining so hard, and we're trying to eat these mangoes. We're trying to keep in a good frame of mind, right? And it was tough. It was tough, right, Stas?
Yeah, not fun at all.
Yeah. And yet, you don't give me crap about that. You give me crap about our citrus tasting and the fact that you had to sit through that lunch.
Horrible lunch. Worst lunch ever.
All right. I hope next year you travel for the season in India, as well as citrus season in Corsica and California. Look, if you're going to do this, you need to become a member of the Fruit Explorers Club. And You need to get you need to contact David Karp. Anyone who's this into it, David Karp would be happy to talk to you about it, right? And we could he knows what the best books are. He's the one that recommended to you all the pornographic French apple book. Remember that?
Yep, I have it.
Yeah. I mean, you know you can buy those things now. Like, people have started like commercializing that again. What are your thoughts on this Apple technology versus the Apple head technology?
I think nothing beats the Apple heads.
Yeah. I could have should have guessed that. Questions. I have had. What would you cook for yourself if not a poached egg? I mean, I don't ever cook for myself except for poached eggs. What else do I cook for myself? Poached eggs.
You open a tin of tuna fish.
Sardines. Big difference. Do you like sardines in a can?
Yeah.
They're delicious. Mm-hmm. I know John loves a canned fish.
Yep. Yes, I do.
What are your feelings on a canned fish, Matt?
I have not met a canned fish that I don't like. I like them all.
Yeah. All right. You know what I don't like? Let me ask you guys this. Are you familiar? So, like, there are some canned fishes that I think, first of all, on sardines, are you guys skinless, boneless, or not skinless, boneless?
Not.
Now, when you do it, do you take the fork and lift the two fillets apart and lift the little weird bony parts out, or you eat it? Okay. Do any of you eat the bones and like that weird gritty calcium garbage?
Sure you do.
I don't.
Really? I didn't realize that was an option. Go for them?
Yeah, people just go for them.
Wow, okay.
What about you, John?
No, I'm with Nastasia on this one.
Yeah. So, you ever bought, and they're the weirdest shaped cans in the canned food aisle. You ever bought the canned salmon?
No.
Okay. So canned salmon, it doesn't come in like, you know, chicken of the sea style little tuna fish cans. It comes in this weird can that's like the height of a soup can, but it's actively tapered. So when you look at it, it's not quite as tapered as a pint glass, but it's like tapered. And I feel like they must have bought all of these cans in like 1956, and they're still trying to run through them because ain't nobody want the canned salmon. Because they just take a chunk of the salmon, they jam it into this tapered can, bones and all, and then they just pressure it up. And then like there's all these like calciumy bones that you have to pick out of it. I don't know. I'm trying to see whether any of you guys were down with this or have had any experience with this tapered canned salmon.
No, don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah. Hmm. John, you?
Nope, never seen it either. I'll
what are your thoughts on potted meats, though? You like a potted meat?
Like, what are you thinking? Yeah, well, no, like, yes, like, I guess,
like,
yeah.
Like Underwood-style deviled meat in a can, I like that stuff. Tastes like dog food in a good way. You know what I mean? Like protein breakdown products.
I don't know if I've ever had that, so...
Do you like Vienna fingers? Those little watery, weird, pasty sausages in a can?
Kind of. I mean, I'll eat them, but I would never buy them.
Yeah. I don't imagine that Nastasia would like those.
No, not really.
Yeah. All right. So the answer, Isabella, is that I would probably just open a can of something and eat it. And they want to know what you guys would cook for yourselves. Well, Nastasia, you've talked about it. You can talk about it some more. What are you cooking for yourself now?
Trader Joe's meats.
Oh, you're doing meats, but Trader Joe's, why? Because they come in good portions?
No, there's always extra. They don't do one human portions there.
If you're willing to do frozen, they have a lot of individually packed, hello, like fish things. So like they...
Hello?
Booker, I'm on the radio.
Booker.
Hello.
Someone's here.
No, that was Dax leaving for school.
Hello.
Wow. Booker, you want to say hello to the people?
Hey, guys.
Oh, hey, Booker, you want to get... So Booker, he can't hear you guys, but...
Yes. Oh, wait.
But, you know, you can hear him.
Give him a headphone.
Here's a headphone, Booker. Here, if you want to hear what they're saying. You're good? All right, so Booker recorded one of the intros for Cooking Issues, and then sped it up, slowed it down, and then as the imagery for it, he has a picture of when I'm screaming the intro of Watson, which is our smaller dog's ears getting pinned back in fear.
And when you say the live part, he blinks.
Watson Blinks. Yeah. So, you know,
where can we see that?
Yeah. Where is this video?
So, Booker, where are you going to upload it? Are you going to upload it to your Subway NYC Instagram account?
I don't know. It's probably copyright.
It's not copyright. It's ours. It's us.
Yeah. No, that sounds good to go. Let's do it.
Yeah.
Anyways, I got it right here for you. Right here.
All
right.
Well,
play it.
Play it. Get over here close so they can hear it from the mic.
Sure. Let me get it up.
Get it.
In the meantime, Holden Trout says the last can of salmon they bought had large, visible tapeworms in it.
Yuck.
Never again.
Yuck.
Are you familiar with the...
Hold on, give me a minute. I got to...
All right, come back anytime. You come back anytime in the next, like, 5 minutes, and we'll be good. So, are you familiar with the band Lard? Which was... Lard was a... what's it called? A collaboration between Jello Biafra from the Dead Kennedys and Al Jorgensen from Ministry. And
well, no.
Yeah, and their most famous, maybe only, the only one I know, song is called The Power of Lard. And Jello Biafra was doing the singing, if I remember, and the line is, "Lard is the tapeworm in a bottle of cheap tequila that comes alive at night and sneaks out to bite your nipple. Lard!" Like that. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, anyway. It's not a good song. Like, everyone in my family hates all of those, like, Jello Biafra collaborations, hates, like the Limba Maniacs, hates any of that stuff from that era.
Here we go.
All right, here we go. Here we go.
I'm going to turn it all the way up.
Yes, you will.
Hello, I'm Cooking Issues. This is Gabe, I'm your host of Cooking Issues, coming to you live.
That's normal. That's real slow, Books. We're going to be here all day.
Related note, we only have like 10 minutes left. Oh my god.
Is this how you de-triggered yourself from having me say it by playing all those weird ways?
I feel as though we should have inquired how long this video was.
Yeah. All right, I got to answer some more questions, Books.
All right.
Oh, my goodness.
10-minute warning. 10-minute warning.
All right. Okay, so Isabella can't have gluten or dairy, as I can't really eat and don't eat meat, which is sad for an Italian. What are your favorite fish dishes and vegetable dishes? I have a very good vegetable dish. You ready for this? Vegan. It's a dish it's the one vegan dish that I've always kind of accidentally made. And it's based on kind of a Navratan style mix. I don't have the exact recipe because I forgot to get the exact recipe. But the idea is take spice mixture of your choice, right? But typically it's like a little bit of coriander, and I usually put like a little bit of cardamom. You saute the heck out of some onions. And you saute whatever spices you add, your choice. It's not a spicy dish, but you can add whatever spices you like there. Then canned pineapple. Oh, before you put the canned pineapple, some cashews, like a bunch of like cashews. Saute those in with it. Then canned pineapple, tomato paste, and coconut milk. And you probably will not need any sugar, but you'll need salt. And sometimes I'll hit it with soy or some sort of umami stuff. And then you blend that. And that's a great sauce base for and we typically do that in bowls with steamed vegetables. But it's kind of a bootleg Navratan. And we make that a lot. So that's real good. And it lasts a while. Is that helpful or no? Yeah. And what are your top fruits that you can eat so many and have to hold yourself back to stop eating them? You got any top fruits, Dust?
Passion fruit.
Oh yeah. What's the most you've ever eaten? Have you ever stopped eating them because you wanted to or just because you ran out?
Ran out.
You know what? We gotta go at some point once this is all over. We gotta go and visit like a farmer. Put them on, like a passion fruit like farmer, and say, listen, what's gonna happen is like we're gonna put you on this show, whatever you need out of us, we're gonna give you. And then you're just going to keep bringing passion fruits to Nastasia until she says stop, and I'm just going to count.
Sounds good.
You want to do that?
Mm-hmm.
That'd be great. When I was in Panama once, I was with Andy Ricker and some other people, and we bought, like, you know those, like laundry bags? Like those mesh bags that are, like, that like onions come in, the giant sacks, you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
Like, not the two-pound ones you get at the grocery store, like the industrial ones, the big ones. We had a sack of mangosteens, and we ate that whole damn thing. And if someone had handed me more mangosteens, I would have been like, yes, I'll eat more mangosteens. I once ate so many kiwis in a row that my mouth started bleeding. And I don't even love, I mean, I like kiwis, but I don't love them. It's just once I'm in a fruit mode, I just keep going. Have I told the raspberry story on the air before?
No.
So I was 20, I don't think I was married yet. So I was 23 and I had just graduated college. I was making, had a really crappy job making almost nothing. And we went to Pick Your Own. And in my mind, Pick Your Own was like, well, it's like free, right? I'm picking my own. Like, that's like all the money's in the labor, right? So, like, it's not like it's going to cost me anything. So, like, my sister-in-law, Miley, who now runs the Food Network. And by the way, I got to mention that. Myself and Jen, we're picking our own raspberries. And I have styles. I mean, you know how I am. I wasn't picking any raspberries. Jen was picking raspberries. Miley was picking raspberries. I was just eating raspberries, right? I didn't pick anything. I spent the entire time we were out there in the raspberry patch eating raspberries. So then they have these like big buckets, like giant tubs, and we get up to the thing, and we're like 10 people back in line, and I start seeing people ringing up and how much money this costs, right? And I'm like, oh my God, there's no way we're gonna pay for all of these raspberries. What the hell are we gonna do? So I was like, hold on a minute. So I take our buckets and I go back into the raspberry zone, into the raspberry patch. And Jen and Miley are thinking that I'm going to dump these raspberries, right? And instead, I just go back in there and I'm just face hoovering, like double-handed jamming raspberries in my mouth, like as fast as I can possibly do it. I've never eaten, because you can never afford it. It's like imagine if you were to dive into a pool of raspberries with your mouth wide open and you were just a tube. You were just a tube like a worm, and that's how many raspberries were going in your mouth. And I came back with two pints of raspberries that cost us like $5. And then there were right next to it, or $10, right next to it, there was a little thing, and I could barely move because my belly was so full of raspberries. There was a little thing called a sin bin, and it's like, because we know you've tried them out in the field, so I put $5 in the sin bin, and that was it. So that was my raspberry moment. And I still love raspberries, but it took me at least a day before I could eat another raspberry. That's how much I like raspberries. That's the length of time I had to take off. What about you, John? You ever fruited up anything big?
No, I think in a similar vein, I think it was either raspberries or blueberries when we were living in France. And yeah, I don't know, whichever one it was, I was just sucking them down, but I was like 8 years old, so I don't remember. But that's probably like the most intense fruit binge I've been on.
I mean, my favorite way to eat blueberries is to put them in a quart container and basically like drink chew them. You know what I mean? And like my standard serving is 3/4 of a quart of blueberries. I don't blend them or anything. I'm just like, hanga, hanga, hanga. Because I think berries taste better in huge quantities. Like, I don't believe a berry tastes better like one at a time. Do you guys believe that?
No.
No, they don't. I'm going to give a shout out. Since I mentioned Miley, Wiley, my brother-in-law Wiley Dufresne, has his pizza pop-up, Stretch Pizza, at Bread's in Union Square. So go check it out. He has they were very crispy, super crispy. In fact, he's been talking to me about these pizzas, because he's been working on pizzas for a while. And he's like, yeah, we just changed the recipe, and like we get, it's real crispy. Like, I'm super happy with it. So then I was like, yesterday, he's like, how was the pizza? I was like, good, really, really crispy. He's like, was it too crispy? Too crispy? I'm like, Wiley, what are you, freaking nuts? What are you, crazy? You've been working on crispy this whole time, because he wants like that New York style, like crispy crust. You like crispy, or you like floppy crust, Dust?
Crispy.
Crispy. So you would like it. And he has, of course, he's Wiley, so he has some interesting flavors. He has an everything bagel pizza. It sounds good, is good. What do you guys think about the idea of an everything bagel pizza? It's not tomato based. It's not a tomato sauce. It's a white sauce.
Sounds good.
I don't like everything bagels.
Ooh,
some Jenny's ice cream company came out with a everything bagel spice ice cream. That sounds a little strange to me.
Mm. I mean, I would eat it. I would eat it. You don't like everything bagels? What's your favorite bagel flavor?
Plain.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
You know what? I kind of appreciate that about you. Egg or plain?
Plain.
And do you like plain cream cheese on it?
Yep.
Lox?
Yep.
Any tomato or anything, or just plain?
Just plain.
A little salt?
Sure.
Do you put tomato on or no tomato?
Depends on the season.
Okay. I'm just curious. It's interesting facts. And again, I kind of appreciate it. Other thing he did that people who know Wiley know that he likes a scrambled egg. Loves a scrambled egg. He did a scrambled egg calzone with like a thin, hyper crispy calzone with like scrambled egg on the inside, scrambled egg not overcooked. What do you think of this concept?
It sounds good.
It was good. You should go to Stretch Pizza right off Union Square and give it a shot. I don't know how long the pop-up's going to last. He said it's indefinite. So obviously, if it's indefinite, I don't know how long it's going to last. Anyways. All right. Anything else we're missing? I got some more questions. Rob Russo on the way out wants to know, have we ever tried Mandarin quads? Nastassia is the queen of the Mandarin quad. Are you not?
They're real good.
They're real good. I like any form of quad. I think kumquats and any form, some of the like lime quats and stuff are a little too sour to just sit there and pound all day. But I was very disappointed in my children because I couldn't get them to appreciate kumquats or any kind of fancy quat. And I take that as a sign that I've failed as a parent because they are delicious. But Rob will send you a pound of his Mandarin quats if you want to check out. Listen, Rob, when Nastasia was in California, she would go to the Santa Monica market like on the regular and just search out the world's greatest quat formats. Is that not true, Stas?
Yeah, I miss all of the stuff there and the giant artichokes.
But you don't trim your artichokes at all, right?
No.
You like your artichokes just basically untrimmed, plain boiled.
Yep.
Okay. And do you peel the stem at all?
No, I trim the stem down to the base.
All the way. So you don't even eat the stem?
No, I don't.
I take the end of the stem off and then peel it because I think it's delicious. You ever buy the crappy little ones and do the full turning where you turn it and basically throw everything but the heart away?
No.
Real pain. Ooh. Fabricating those.
The worst.
What, fabricating those things?
Yeah.
And then you forget to wash your board adequately and your board is bitter. Oh my God, yeah. Bitter board. You ever had a bitter board problem? Oh,
yeah.
Yeah. The bitter board. And John, what do you add to your poaching liquid to keep the stuff from turning? Do you do classic? Are you like, what do you do?
Lemons?
So where Nastasia used to live and I used to live, but not at the same time, never at the same time, there was a cheap fruit market called Styles. And they had two different Styles markets. There was the, you know, one that was four blocks south and one that was three blocks north of where I lived. And then, and they were super cheap, but every once in a while they would get kind of like just slightly over the hill artichokes and they were fundamentally free. You ever done that at Styles, Stas?
Yeah.
Yeah. And so like for the 5 years that I lived in that neighborhood, I cooked an unbelievable amount of artichokes just because you would go in and you couldn't even carry the amount of artichokes you could afford. That's how cheap the artichokes were at Styles. And so like, yeah, I would do artichokes every which way. So I got really fast at turning artichokes. Not a skill you necessarily want, but yeah, I got real fast at turning it. But Nastasia doesn't appreciate a turned artichoke. I find, Nastasia, that if you're going to have a bunch of people over, they prefer them kind of poached off and then quartered into hearts that have been turned and everything. Just saying.
Okay, that's not my experience.
You think people, regular randos, like to have like that, all that huge pile of leaves and they're dipping and straining it in their teeth? I like doing that.
That's the only way I serve it. So if they don't like it,
they can get out.
I don't care. Yeah.
They can get the hell out. And do you serve both butter and mayonnaise?
No, just butter.
Ooh, I'm a mayonnaise man. John?
I'm only mayo, yep.
Yeah. Matt, where are you? Where are you on this? Now choose wisely.
I can't be the tiebreaker. I was spacing out. I didn't listen.
Artichokes! Mayonnaise or butter?
Butter.
Oh, Christ. All right, cooking issues.
Cooking Issues is powered by Simplecast. Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Instagram and Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can also find us at facebook.com/heritageradionetwork. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Subscribe to the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join the HRN family by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.
Hi, listeners. We want to tell you about a podcast we're really digging. It's called Christopher Kimball's Milk Street Radio. Every week, they travel the world to find the most fascinating stories about food, including children who harvest cod tongues after school in Norway, and a detective who tracks down food thieves. And on Milk Street Radio, you can always find the unexpected. The comedian who ranks apples using an elaborate 100-point system, the secret history of grocery stores, and how to eat your way through Italy. They also interview the most beloved names in food like Jacques Pepin, Sola Aweli, Jose Andres, Jet Tila, Ina Garten, Nigella Lawson, and Padma Lakshmi. Plus, co-hosts Christopher Kimball and Sarah Moulton do live calls with listeners and answer their questions about ingredients, techniques, and culinary mysteries. Like, why roasting a leg of lamb made one caller's oven explode? Ever wonder why your bread won't rise or your souffle falls flat? Chris and Sarah have the answers. You'll also hear from a rotating cast of contributors, including Kenji Lopez-Alt, Cheryl Day, Dan Pashman from The Sporkful, and Alex Inouz, a French guy cooking from YouTube. Take a listen at 177milkstreet.com/radio or just search your podcast app for Milk Street Radio.